the only time when I will flip my hat, which I only rarely wear these days anyway, but when I flip it back is because I have a mole on the back of my neck, and I'm like, you know what? I should protect this from the sun. Like, there's an actual utilitarian.
Let's see the mole. Wow. Let's see the mole.
Wow, a mole on the back of the neck.
I really want to see your mole.
It's pretty moly.
Oh my God, it's huge.
Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Dan Levitard. That's Mina Kimes and Pablo Torre shaming him. I want him to do the rest of the show that way.
I just want to make sure
he's seen a doctor.
How good can Mina's beloved Rams really be if Jared Goff continues to stink?
Wow, the rare winner being criticized by our show instead of who's to blame and let's yell about the Patriots. Let's start the show with a Jared Goff question. And this was better than the Super Bowl where we saw Bill Belichick unmask a quarterback that we all believe to be largely a system quarterback. I ask you guys this because I really don't know the answer to this question. Do we know for sure that Jared Goff is better than Carson Wentz? Because I don't feel like I know that Jared Goff is actually better than Carson Wentz, even as Carson Wentz has thrown more interceptable passes this year than any starter. I believe Jared Goff, like most of you, is a system quarterback, and it got him to the last game one time. But if you meet Belichick in the last game, you're going to get 13-3 because he does what he did to him last night. And it didn't much matter because Cam Newton, the guy we might want to be talking about, has thrown for fewer than 300 yards in the last three games. That's 90 yards a game.
Well, we're not talking about the Patriots because the Patriots are no longer relevant. Like, just let that sink in. It's 2020. The Patriots are no longer relevant. The Rams are. Jared Goff, to answer your question, Dan, is better than Carson Wentz. He doesn't stick, but he's kind of like the sliced turkey of quarterbacks. Like, you can make a pretty good sandwich with him, but he's not going to make a sandwich good, if that makes sense, right? I guess if you really like turkey, you probably
I love turkey and sandwiches, okay. so you're really speaking my language. I appreciate you dumbing it down for me.
So the Rams, you know, and that matters for them because this is a team that's not just trying to win. It's a team that wants to win the Super Bowl. Like, they have championship aspirations. They have a championship defense. They have a championship run game. But we just saw that in San Francisco. Like, they had all of those qualities and they went into the Super Bowl and they got stopped by the Chiefs because they didn't have a better quarterback. So if I'm a Rams fan, that's what I'm worried about. Everything around Goff is great, but he's enough to sink this team from winning all the way.
Yeah, I'm now working through an extended metaphor off of Mina's Jared Goff is sliced turkey by wondering, can we make Cooper Kupp into mayonnaise? Is that offensive? I don't really know where we are in 2020 at this point, but he was great. He was super good. I mean, that offense, Dan, like what they do, the system notion, what I was disappointed by was the fact that we didn't get Belichick totally dismantling that system. And that system, let's keep in mind, was allegedly literally a technological system. We theorized that the Rams were, you know, getting Jared Goff the play call until that 15 seconds of final pre-snap time. And Bill Belichick was waiting till that 15 seconds and then flipping it all around and totally discombobulating Jared Goff. We thought that Brian Flores in week 8 with the Dolphins did something similar with pressure, right? Just messing with Jared Goff's head. Jared Goff wasn't good, but he was good enough. I think that the Rams defense just might be enough to get them certainly past Mina's Seahawks. And by the way, I just want to point out, she said if she's a Rams fan, and this is where the bigamy does enter, because I think she's also a Rams fan. Again, she's wearing her classic Rams polo shirt that is clearly like not the Radio Shack one, but definitely what she always wears when she talks about the Rams.
That's the absolute, this is black and tan. This is nothing to do with the Rams. If anything, I look like a Steelers fan, which I just realized we're about to talk about the Steelers next, and I've set myself up to be roasted again.
Yes.
Do Mina's beloved 11-1 Steelers need to beat the Bills this weekend to prove that they're legit?
Okay, this was strange, even in this pandemic season. We're at 5 o'clock on a Monday, an 11-0 team that is not being treated like an undefeated team usually is 11 weeks into our most popular sport, loses to Washington in a way that, while not predictable, is so very football because you lose to Washington in that spot. And it's on at a time of day where we don't even see that the Dolphins of 1972, the only undefeated team ever, is toasting the fact that those Steelers are the last unbeaten to go down. I believe that people do not believe in this team for reasons that extend beyond the Chiefs being in their conference. I also believe this team has a ton of ways to beat you, and one of the problems it has is Ben Roethlisberger isn't throwing the ball downfield like he used to. I want to watch Gunslinger Ben, but Gunslinger Ben has been handcuffed because turnovers are not allowed in this sport anymore, and they've made Ben Roethlisberger a caretaker that he's never been before in this league.
Yeah, I feel like we should be impressed by the Steelers getting to 11-0 and then even 11-1, but there are many issues with that team right now, right? The defense is being hollowed out by injury and loss due to COVID protocol. That offense, like, look, it's good. It's just that we know that Ben Roethlisberger is not prime, anything close to prime Ben. He's subprime Ben Roethlisberger. And against the Bills in specific, like, we talk about the Chiefs obviously being the standard by which we should measure the Steelers, and of course that is so. But what the Bills have been doing, I mean, watching Josh Allen, like, Mina, I'm fascinated as to how you process this, because I know we all should have had reasonable and continue to have reasonable doubts about Josh Allen, but watching him play, he has the ceiling seemingly of Pat Mahomes, but just the floor also of Josh Allen, except he hasn't been falling through that trap door to get to the floor very lately.
Wow. Mina made faces at both of us, and I don't know which of us got it more wrong. You saying Josh Allen has the ceiling of Mahomes.
Ceiling.
You didn't like me calling Roethlisberger a caretaker either.
No, I was okay with you calling him a caretaker. What I didn't like was the phrasing, they've made him a caretaker. Ben Roethlisberger is a caretaker. He's like a point guard in this offense because he's old, Dan. Like, when he tries to throw it deep, he's not as accurate as he used to be. The Pittsburgh offensive coordinator, Randy Fickner, they've rightly recognized those limitations and built an offense around it. The problem is that over the last couple of weeks, defenses have finally keyed in on that. They're playing aggressive man press coverage, right? And they're not respecting the run at all because the Steelers can't run the ball. So they're daring Ben Roethlisberger to beat them over the top. So in this game, which I expect the Bills to win, if I'm a Steelers fan and I want to prove that they're legitimate or that they can even compete with the Chiefs, I want to see some sort of counterpunch, whether it's an actually successful run game or Ben Roethlisberger actually throwing it deep. Because if they can't do either of those things, they don't have a chance. As a financial reporter, do not invest in Ben Roethlisberger. You are going to become over-leveraged and burnt, and that's how America got in trouble in 2008.
Oh, finally, okay. Mina's investigative business journalism rears its head after years of
wheelhouse.
Dormancy. I'm just saying, this is how the financial markets crashed, because people like Pablo were investing in things that they didn't understand, and honestly, that is how people have talked about the Steelers for much of the season, so it's appropriate.
Should the NBA really want Kyrie answering more questions?
I do not dispute that Kyrie Irving, when healthy, is excellent. I will say, however, that his fame is disproportionate to his excellence, at least in part because he's an iconoclast. He's someone who's a little bit rebellious, different, moved away, broke up from LeBron James, old head LeBron James, to carve his own path. And since then, has been making a lot of comments that make us roll our eyes. But young people, until recently, have ridden with Kyrie Irving. They've liked him. But here's his Instagram post after being fined $25,000 for not talking to the media, which is not allowed. The key to it is at the end. I'll let you read it for yourself. But the end is really chef's kiss here. I do not talk to pawns. My attention is worth more. I think people need to understand that these leagues and these networks have partnerships with these players. They have to speak contractually. He's going to lose a lot of money, and so are the Nets if he keeps this boycott up, because they fine the Nets as well. And I assume somebody, you never get a guy. All these guys in that sport would love to not answer media questions all the time. They have to answer media questions. It's part of being a professional.
So Kyrie Irving is rightfully being roasted for, you know, the language, the fine money, the pawns. But in some ways, actually, it's quite brilliant to say you're not talking to the media, because then if we criticize him, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like, we're disrespecting him. That's why he's not talking about it. It's a vicious cycle. I don't care. I don't care if he talks. I don't care if he gives quotes to reporters. But the NBA does care because the league understands that they have a mutually beneficial relationship with the media, that coverage drives interest in the sport. Their concern is that there's a slippery slope here, that other players might also accept fines and stop talking to the media, and then there becomes a rebellion. I don't see that happening. We've been down this road before in the NFL. Marshawn Lynch stopped talking to the media. There was a bunch of hand-wringing. Oh no, who's going to give quotes? And guess what? Nothing happened. Other players continue to talk to the media because other players aren't necessarily like Kyrie Irving.
Can I just reject Dan's earlier label of Kyrie Irving as iconoclast? Because I get where it's coming from, Dan. I just feel like the more we treat Kyrie Irving as like enlightened or artistic, even despite his use of the word art in any way, the more we are indulging what is ultimately an extraordinarily common phenomenon, which is that a young guy watched way too many YouTube videos, his brain got eaten by the internet, and all the things I love and loved about Kyrie Irving, his charitable works, his handle, which may be the best of all time, his otherwise really genuine thoughtfulness, it all gets filtered through this prism of, wait a minute, you're online way too much.
Really?
And by the way, Dan, he's the guy who still, once again, said that we don't have pictures of the Earth.
Oh boy.
This is who we're arguing about. Like, iconoclasm is one thing. He is a guy with a degree from YouTube University.
Spoken like a true pawn.
Coming up next on my Soul's TV show.
Dan, you be Nate Oates. So you're the kid in the GIF who just, you know, made like the insults and be like self-satisfied looking. Are you ready?
Do you question if Nate Oates raises a fair question about Coach K?
All right, so Coach K says that it is a sad situation to be playing in the middle of all of this nonsense, grabbing at money in college basketball. He says this after a couple of losses, and all of you remember that Coach K, that one bad season that he had a long time ago, all of a sudden, back problems, I'm out of here. I like to be around the winning, the losing, not so much. So let's hear what he has to say here.
I would just like for the safety, the mental health and the physical health of our players and staff for their, like, to assess where we're at for the good of the game and the good of the safety and the mental and physical health of our players and staff and whatever. We need to constantly look at this thing.
I feel like my criticism there is unfair, even though they're losing. Like, what he's saying is perfectly reasonable. Let's see how Nate Oates from Alabama, what he has to say.
Can I ask you something? I just want to know your opinion. Do you think if Coach K hadn't lost the 2-9 conference games at home, if he'd still be saying that?
Probably not.
Okay. I just wanted you to say it, not me.
Whoa!
Okay, Nate Oates saying the same thing I just said and then apologized for, and then he said it again. Pablo, what do you make of all of this?
I mean, for the record, Coach K, like the other beacon of college basketball wisdom that we have, Rick Pitino, has been on this for before the season, right? It dates back to earlier. Coach K has been trying to say, let's get this started in January, maybe. And as much as Nate Oates, like, I enjoy the prodding of this guy who normally does not get prodded nearly enough, the message here seems pretty indisputable, even though the messenger is the caricature that we can all make fun of in other times that don't involve a literal pandemic.
Yeah, this is a case of maybe not the greatest messenger, because Nate Oates also said about coronavirus and restrictions, we're not meant to live in isolation. Dude, that is how we got into this in the first place. Like, I love a coach sassing Coach K. It is enjoyable watching that. I did the, like, you know, the GIF, but I don't want to be on this guy's side either. I don't want to be on either of their sides. I just want to be on the side of, you know, health and doing the right thing.
Dan, I just like how Mina exclusively thinks in GIFs. Like, she doesn't have to be like, and I did the GIF. Like, that's
but
not
it was a
just
good impersonation,
a GIF,
though.
That's a human reaction.
She wouldn't have had to say to me, oh, GIF, and I would have known what she was doing there. It was a good impersonation, a good pantomime.
You know that one GIF where all the kids are reacting to somebody owning someone else? And
I
like,
saw
whoa!
It. Yes. I knew what she was doing. Up.
Okay, so Dan, you have to be the kid in the middle who's like, okay, all right, let me set this up again. All right.
Am I going
do the whole
right
thing
right
over. Do the whole thing over. I know how to make this thing.
We're using all of this. Keep going.
Yes. Tell us. Coach us up. Let's go. Let's do it. What do you need from me? You think they're not airing all of this as it is?
Set it up again.
All right, hold on.
What is happening right now?
Okay. Dan, you be Nate Oates. So you're the kid in the GIF who just, you know, made like the insults and be like self-satisfied looking. Are you ready? That's the GIF. We did the GIF.
It's good. It was good. Yours was good. Mine was terrible. I look like I have a back spasm.
Do you question which coach was saltier during this handshake?
All right, so Georgia Tech is terrible this year, at least in part because Paul Johnson was running that horse and wagon Amish offense from the 1800s where they do the option and he recruited players to run the option, and now they've got players who run the option, but they're not running the option. So he's mad after the game because they lose to Pittsburgh. And I don't want those Arduzzi problems. Do you? Do you guys want the problems with Pitt's coach here, who seems like he has a bit of a wrench for a hand and he just grabs this here? Yeah. And just
took off his face shield.
Yes. Now there's pointing going on. And
watch Narduzzi.
Yes.
Whoa.
He is holding on to that. And then the glasses come off.
Let me defog my visor to make sure I was just insulted in the way that I imagined I was.
And that concludes our Pittsburgh, Georgia Tech coverage. You interested in this story, Mina?
Look, if there's anyone who understands reluctance to engage in a handshake, it is me.
Oh, yes.
Mina Kimes.
Yes, that's right. That's
but
right.
He does come across as a bit of a sore loser, right? Which, like many college football coaches, are sore loser, but that was uniquely sore loser-ish.
Pablo, get out of here. We're going to show a montage here of Mina just falling for handshakes. Of course.
Good to be here.
Oh, why am I in this?
Oh, yeah.
Ah. Yes.
Sorry about that one.
Oh,
it's Pablo again.
That's a
ball. No.
Sunday on Lifetime. A KFC mini movie, A Recipe for Seduction.
A KFC mini movie, Recipe for Seduction. You want to seduce me, baby? Fried chicken is the way to do it. KFC, I find it seductive. Let's see what we have here.
What the hell are you doing?
A Lifetime original mini movie.
You don't answer my proposal, and now you're not answering my call.
I think I'm falling for the new chef.
Jessica is falling for Harlan.
The cook? Leave Jessica alone and skip town.
That's a secret recipe that's going to change the world.
Harlan claims to have some secret recipe.
A secret recipe?
Spare me.
We all have our secrets. If you marry my daughter, I promise there'll be more long weekends in your future.
Mom, I have to tell you something.
We have a problem.
Secret's out, chicken man. I'll take care of this.
Oh, just kill him already.
Who the hell are you?
Harlan Sanders, the new chef.
All right, so Mario Lopez is Colonel Sanders, and I am not quite so down in 2020 with equality that I'm willing to go from Scarface having Al Israel instead of Hispanics to taking away Colonel Sanders' genuine Americanism as the KFC representative and replacing him with Mario Lopez. This is insulting, but funny. Pablo, are you intrigued?
I'm intrigued and I fully disagree with you, Dan. I see this actually as like the Hamilton of fast food inspired mini movies. Like, you never thought you'd get a Hispanic Colonel Sanders, but yes, absolutely. It is time. It is time for that artistic vision.
Mina, how about you?
I'm with Pablo in the respect that I think the cross ethnic casting totally works. But Mario Lopez, like, that feels like a poor casting decision. They would have been better off going with someone like Dan himself.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mina. You are so right. Look at that, ladies and gentlemen. That, and keep in mind, what am I looking to seduce? That piece of chicken in my left hand.
The only thing photoshopped onto that photo, for the record, is the collar. Everything else actually is in real life.
We're all done here. Have a good weekend. If you want more Mina Kimes in your life, and why would you not? The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. You can find it wherever it is that you do that stuff on your devices. Also, ESPN Daily. Look at Pablo. He's never happier than when he's involved in the middle of the promotion. We're talking about Pablo. It makes Pablo happy when people are talking about Pablo.
You didn't say the name.
I'm sorry, what is the name?
Oh, did you say ESPN Daily or?
He did. You were so like caught up in him saying Pablo Torre. You didn't notice that he said the name of your own podcast.
You just heard your name and you didn't hear the name of your podcast. You are the most self-absorbed person in the history of the network, Pablo. Look at my arms. I'm shredded.
Ooh. You are kind of low-key shredded. Everybody says this about you. You know that, right?
Don't tell people. It's our secret. The fat jokes, they make us sore.
It's V-Week on ESPN as we continue Jim Valvano's fight against cancer.